Outside the Lines starts now.
This is an exciting moment in the history of the Marlins franchise. The dream of our fans has finally come true.
It all started out so promising for the Miami Marlins. A new name, new uniforms, new publicly funded ballpark, a title-winning manager, and several big-money free agents. This was the year the Marlins would become a force in the NL East and captivate an apathetic fan base in South Florida.
Got it.
But that did not happen. The Marlins stumbled mightily out of the gate, finishing dead last in the division while failing to fill their glistening stadium with new fans. The statements in April from their new manager certainly didn't help.
I heard a lot of people, this is the biggest mistake so far in my life.
And now the team has traded its best players north of the border for mostly prospects. Fans of the new-look Marlins, caught hook, line, and sinker on the promise of a fresh start, now thrown back in the murky waters of a fire sale. Today on Outside the Lines, we examine the building up and selling out of the Miami Marlins.
And now, sitting in for Bob Lee, Steve Weissman.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. But three times, that could be the only unprecedented part of a story we've seen before. For the third time in less than 15 years, the Marlins franchise held a fire sale, dumping big-name players and their large contracts. Only this time, it didn't come after the spoils of victory. Instead, it arrived after the city of Miami spoiled its team with a new ballpark. For a man who made his fortune as an art dealer, some would argue Marlins owner Jeffrey Loria's greatest skill is the art of deception, baiting a city into building him a new museum in which he would display the high-priced works of Reyes, Burley, and others. But now, Marlins Park may become another overpriced baseball mausoleum. The Marlins agreed to a deal with the Blue Jays that would send Jose Reyes, Josh Johnson, Mark Burley, John Buck, and Emilio Bonifacio to Toronto for a package of young players, including several minor leaguers. The Marlins have been dumping players since July, and when this trade becomes official, Miami will have dealt 12 of the 25 players from this year's opening day roster. Our Twitter question today, what is your reaction to the latest Marlins fire sale? Send your responses to OTL on ESPN or to myself at S. Weissman ESPN. Use the hashtag Marlins Fire Sale. We'll post the best throughout the show. And we now welcome our baseball insider Buster Olney to the show. And Buster, this trade still needs to be approved. If you were the commissioner, what are your thoughts on whether this is in the best interest of baseball?
If I were the commissioner, I'd be worried about the owners' meetings, which begin today and take place tomorrow, and knowing how many angry people are going to be in the room. In talking with executives with teams today, they say that there are going to be a lot of questions raised about revenue sharing money thrown at the Marlins in recent years, whether or not this is going to do damage to the Miami market going forward. But if you're Bud Selig, hey, you know, this is a road you've been down before. My guess is because there's not as much cash involved in this trade as there have been in previous ones, you probably grit your teeth, approve it, and move on, knowing that there are going to be a lot of questions to be answered.
Now, Buster, other than Yunel Escobar, many of the players the Marlins are getting back are unknown to most fans. So who are these guys and what do they bring?
Well, you know, it's a decent package of prospects. When you talk to evaluators with other teams, but there's no question about it. The way that this deal is viewed by other clubs is that this is essentially a salary dump, that's the greatest value to the Marlins. And in as a pure baseball trade, some of the general managers I spoke with today believe that actually the Marlins did okay, because there are questions about Jose Reyes going forward and how healthy he'll be and whether or not he'll be worth $96 million over the next 5 years. And Mark Burley is owed $48 million over the next 3 years. And people are questioning whether or not, you know, the Blue Jays are going to get return at his age. But let's face it, there's a bigger question about this trade from the Marlins' perspective because of their market, because of the belief in that marketplace from the taxpayers that they were buying into a team that was going to build going forward rather than tear down.
This has made a lot of people unhappy, including some Marlins players. Logan Morrison, Giancarlo Stanton both tweeted their displeasure of this trade last night. Could there still be more moves from the Marlins?
Yeah, no question about it. Rival executives are telling me that Ricky Nolasco, who is owed about $11.5 million for the 2013 season, is out on the market. They have talked during the summertime and then in recent days to other teams about Logan Morrison. People are wondering if after Stanton's tweet last night, whether or not the Marlins might be looking to move him. I don't think so. He's an inexpensive player. He's probably one of the few players that they have to draw fans to. So I don't think there's any pressure on them to do something there. But think about this. As we speak today, the Marlins don't have a single dollar of player contract obligation beyond the 2013 season. A very different situation than just 24 hours ago.
On the other side, Buster, what does this trade do for the Blue Jays prospects in the AL East?
Steve, it makes them relevant in my eyes. And keep in mind that it doesn't seem like there are going to be a lot of blockbuster moves made by other teams in the American League East during this offseason. The Yankees are mostly hoping for the status quo, re-signing Andy Pettit, Hiroki Kuroda, Mariano Rivera. The Red Sox are trying to do some things with their pitching staff. They're talking about Mike Napoli, but not big blockbuster moves. The Tampa Bay Rays always have that fragile equation that they're trying to maintain with a $60 million payroll. And the Orioles are going to make some incremental changes, but not necessarily big moves. And now the Blue Jays step up, address their biggest question, which was in their rotation, which ranked 25th in ERA last year, getting Josh Johnson, getting Mark Burley. So to me, they're going to be now in the middle of this great five-team race in 2013.
Buster, another big question, who's going to manage this team? How is this trade going to affect Toronto's search?
Well, we know Alex Anthopoulos, the Toronto general manager, is about as thorough as any in baseball, and he seems to speak to a new candidate every day. Fox Sports reported, for example, that he reached out to Bobby Cox, the former manager of the Atlanta Braves, to ask him if he'd come on board. Some of the people who know Alex have told me that they still think that Sandy Alomar Jr. Is a candidate that he'll look at seriously, maybe Brian Butterfield, who used to be a coach on his staff. But the bottom line is, I think Alex is still going through that process of deciding who's serious and who's not. He's probably talked to more managerial candidates over the last 3 years than anyone in baseball.
All right, Buster Olney, always appreciate the insight and knowledge.
Thanks, Steve.
Now, to further this discussion, we welcome in ESPN sports business reporter Darren Revelle. We also welcome ESPN reporter and Miami native Pedro Gomez, as well as Greg Cody, a columnist for the Miami Herald. Greg, we're going to start with you. How is this trade being received in South Florida?
Oh, terribly, awfully. People here are somewhat beyond angry. I guess furious would be the word. You know, we've seen this before. We've seen this movie, and it's the same ending. It's an outrage. The difference now is that Jeffrey Loria spent years getting this new stadium with the spoken belief that this was going to lead to consistently competitive teams and high payrolls. And after one season of that, he's aborting the entire plan and apparently going back to the frugal ways of his past. And I wouldn't blame the other owners for wondering, where is all this money going? You know, they saved millions by trading Hanley Ramirez. They saved about $60 million yesterday. What are they doing with all this money? If they pour it back into the team, that's great, but I don't think anybody expects that to happen.
What are you hearing about this, Pedro?
Well, echoing what Greg has said there, but the other part of this equation that really is infuriating the people in Miami is the fact that the previous two times that the Marlins won the World Series and then basically had the fire sales to get rid of all their players, well, they had the ownership group, whether it be Wayne Huizenga or the current group of Jeffrey Loria, had at least the reason that they could say, look, we're playing at a football stadium where the Dolphins play. We don't have a way of getting revenue into this franchise. Therefore, we have to get rid of these pieces. That argument is now gone, and that's probably the biggest piece of the argument that the fan base down there is so livid about. This is not a situation where the fan base, the pulse is flatlined. It's the complete opposite. They're probably going 200 beats per minute right now because they're so incensed with what has gone on. And again, the fact that there is no reason, because the stadium was built, and the stadium was built was built primarily because this ownership group promised the fans of South Florida, if we get this stadium, we will put the money back into the franchise. And now it's the complete opposite after just really half a season, when you think of the fact that Hanley Ramirez, Omar Infante, Aníbal Sánchez, those pieces started to go back in July. So they didn't even give this franchise one season together.
Now, Darren, with that in mind, you conducted a poll on Twitter today asking if owners owe their fans the promise to try and field a competitive team. So what did you learn?
Well, Steve, about one in five people thought that they did not owe them a promise. So about 80% of people think that when you're an owner of a team, you have a responsibility, to be a member of society and to be able to kind of have the team as an extension of the community. Now, the question here is, does Jeffrey Loria have a fiduciary responsibility because taxpayer funds were used for this stadium? And my question is, and I'm not blaming it on the city and county officials, but my question is, why in the hundreds of pages of documents, if you implied, and Jeffrey Loria implied, that you're expecting a winning team, why isn't there one sentence in there that it could at least bring you to court and say you have to make a good faith effort to compete? And if you do not, there are ramifications. I mean, there are all these clauses, Steve, in this contract about they have to donate 10,000 tickets a year and what they have to do for the elderly and the youth and the fact that they have to name it the Miami Marlins. Why didn't they put something in there that said we need to have some sort of responsibility? You have a history, Jeffrey Loria, and if we're going to spend our tough-earned money, there's going to be some ramifications if you don't come through.
That said, if there is that commitment, that promise, Greg, I ask you this. I mean, the team still ranked 18th in baseball in attendance this year, and that's the lowest season total for a brand new park since 1982. Why do you think that was?
Well, it was a nightmare season from opening night. You had the Aussie Guillen Fidel Castro mess 5 games into the season. You had historic losing going on for a new stadium, and everything just became a nightmare for this club. But you know what? The weird thing is, the Marlins could have survived a terrible season. They survived the Fidel Castro mess, which is a particular nightmare in South Florida here. But I don't know if they survived this. I think Jeffrey Loria has crossed a line. He's reached a tipping point where I think the damage he's done may be irreversible in the minds of a lot of fans down here. This is a franchise in crisis, which sounds ridiculous to say with a brand new stadium, but this is an awful situation that Jeffrey Loria has created down here.
Pedro, you were on top of the whole Ozzie Guillen situation. In terms of Cuban Americans, did he really survive that ordeal?
Well, it's like Greg says, they did actually get past it. And if the club had won this year, that would never have even surfaced again past the midway point of the season. But the fact that the club started floundering so badly starting in June, and I think they won 5 or 6, 7 games in the month of June and completely were out of the race, then all of a sudden the supposed face of the franchise, Hanley Ramirez, is traded in July. Then now we see the next face of the franchise, which is Jose Reyes. He is now traded. You know, a bigger issue here also, Steve, could be the fact that you've got two ball clubs right now in Major League Baseball, Oakland and Tampa Bay, that are each trying to secure taxpayer-funded stadiums. How now do these stadiums move forward, seeing what has happened in Miami? This is a bigger problem for Major League Baseball, probably, than it is on the local front for the Miami Marlins.
Darren, how would you answer that question?
Well, it is a problem for Major League Baseball because, as I said, referencing that clause, I mean, now there might be a clause that will tie performance to investment, from the city and the county if they're going to invest in a stadium. You know, this is, I'm just wondering, Greg said that people believed that they were really going to invest. I sat with David Sampson, the president of the Marlins, in September of last year, and he told me, we are confidently going to average 30,000 per game, 30,000 fans per game. And for 73% of the games, they did not do that. But yes, this is a problem going forward. And I think if there is one thing, I think Bud Selig's probably going to approve this trade, but there is a major situation with the revenue sharing here. Because going to 2016, there are going to be 15 teams, basically, that are not going to be able to get revenue-sharing dollars. The Marlins can get that money. And so they can make themselves, they can go as low as they want to go. There is no salary floor. They can have $25 million payroll, and they can basically make a lot of money. And, Steve, you kind of rely on the fact that owners are going to come in, they're millionaires and billionaires, and they want to win. Well, if they don't want to win, baseball is definitely the best league to make money and just lose and throw everything out the drain.
Perhaps we'll see more owners like Jeffrey Loria. Greg, back to you. How would you characterize Jeffrey Loria?
Extremely unpopular, frugal to a fault. Keep in mind, this is a notorious owner who 2 years ago was publicly scolded and admonished by MLB and the Players Union for egregiously underspending on player payrolls, contrasted against the revenue sharing and such. So he's been admonished publicly before, and for that reason alone, I don't think his player payroll will go down to a ridiculous $20 or $25 million level. But I do think it's going to top off probably in the $40 or $50 million range. And based on all his promises to get this new stadium built, that's a violation of the public trust, whether it's written or not. That's a violation of the faith that he supposedly had to get this stadium built.
That said, back to you, Darren. As a businessman, how would you characterize Loria?
Well, Steve, it totally depends on where you're looking at it. You know, from his perspective, if you truly believe he's trying to make money and he's in this business to make money, it's brilliant. I'm sorry, it is. I mean, the fact is that the rules of baseball kind of have this socialism going on where we help the haves help the have-nots. And so if you can become a have and build have revenue, which is, you know, if you're going to eventually sell the team, say, and you build a new stadium and then you become a have not and you're getting revenue from the Yankees, from the Red Sox. This is a brilliant business move. Is it unethical? It would seem that would be the case. And going back to Greg's point, I think whether it's written or not, you know, maybe there are lawsuits that could arise here from oral promises or written promises through emails that represented that he was doing something other than he did and that this was in some way premeditated.
Pedro, Darren says it's a brilliant business move. What do you think about that?
I mean, at the end of the day, if we're talking about just how big your bank account is going to be, he might be the smartest guy in the room from a personal standpoint when you look at the 30 owners. But again, we go back to the first question that you asked Darren. Is there a responsibility to the fan base to put a competitive club on the field? And I think if you ask any owner just moments before they're about to take ownership of that club in any sport, they will all say absolutely, unequivocally, we will do something for this local community to make them proud of what we're putting on the field. And in this particular case, you have to look at it and say, what exactly are the Marlins doing? And I don't know that there's anybody that is a Marlins fan right now that is going to continue to be a Marlins fan if this is the course of action. Certainly, Loria will line his pockets. There's no question about that. But is that really the bottom line when you own a franchise? You know, it costs a lot more money to win than it does to lose. That's been proven over and over and over in just about any sport. But losing, after a while, you beat your fans down, and there is somewhat of a responsibility. This is a very competitive market. The Dolphins have taken a lot of hits for not fielding a competitive team the way they did in the 70s and 80s and into the 90s. The Miami Heat went out and made tremendous moves to put themselves at the top of the NBA block. There's a lot of competition. The Marlins, however, seem to be doing the complete opposite right now.
Greg, if no one trusts the Marlins' ownership down there, why did they even approve giving those taxpayer dollars to build the new stadium?
Well, there were a lot of politicians in Miami-Dade County and the city of Miami who did trust Jeffrey Loria. And a year ago during the offseason, it appeared as if he was keeping that trust by going out and spending big to get guys like Jose Reyes and Mark Burley. The problem is he abandoned everything. And Jeffrey Loria has built up so little trust over the years down here that you don't have to be real cynical to imagine that the Marlins having a lousy season, he was probably high-fiving and fist-bumping David Sampson in the boardroom because that gave him all the excuse he needed in his mind to dismantle what he had assembled. So, you know, I think the ideal situation for Jeffrey Loria is to have these bare bones budgets to make his profit and to say, screw the team and screw the fans down here. That's what it appears like.
Darren, do you think this was premeditated? He knew all along, win
or
lose?
Maybe not, Steve, but if you look at his quotes today that he gave CBSSports.com, I mean, the fact is, last place is not acceptable, and that's not the exact quote, but last place is unacceptable. If you're building through prospects, and I'm not a baseball guy, so I don't know how good these prospects are, but if you're building through prospects, last place is unacceptable. I mean, you're gutting the whole team. You're on a 4 to 5 year timeline here for getting out of last place through prospect building. Are they going to last that long? I wouldn't think so. I mean, as far as really being able to have people show up to the stadium and trying to convince people that you're really building something.
Pedro, what do you think the future of Marlins baseball is in South Florida?
You know, you look at the brand new stadium, so it's not like the club is going to, you know, there's been talk over the course of the last 10, 12, 15 years of possible contraction in baseball. But if you have a brand new stadium built that is not even 1 year old, it's hard to imagine contraction. I would say this, if the Marlins were still playing over at the Dolphin Stadium, I think contraction right now would probably be at the forefront of what's going on. Of course, that would also make Loria even a richer person if there were contraction, but Major League Baseball might have to bite the bullet on something like that. But with a brand new stadium, you have to say that the franchise is not going anywhere. In terms of ownership, however, I know that there are people that would love for Jeffrey Loria to sell the club. Again, quoting what he told CBSSports.com just a little while ago, he is defiant. He said it's stupid to think that he would sell the club. So if those quotes are accurate, then the Marlins are in for some very, very lean years. And again, this is a franchise that over the course of its 20-plus seasons in Major League Baseball has had so many losing seasons. But that doesn't mean it's acceptable.
Greg, if you had the opportunity to sit down with Jeffrey Loria right now, what would you ask him?
I would say, where's all the money going? You saved $35 million by dumping Hanley Ramirez. What's happening with that money? You cut your payroll by $63 million with this latest move. Where's that $100 million going? Is it going right back into your pocket? Or is it going back into the team and back into the public trust that you asked for to get this stadium built? You, Loria, are under an obligation to have a competitive payroll and keep up the end of the bargain that you struck to get this stadium built.
We will leave it there. Greg Cody, appreciate the time. Pedro Gomez and Darren Revelle for joining us on Outside the Lines. And now on ESPN.com, Jerry Krasnick explains why the Marlins must prepare for embarrassment in 2013 after their latest fire sale.